Oyez, oyez, oyez. The Honorable Supreme Court of Texas is now in session pursuant to adjournment.
You may be seated. Chief Justice Phillips is out of the state on official court business, but he will participate fully in the deliberation of all the cases set for this morning. We have three causes on the submission docket of our court. Texas Education Agency versus Leeper, Chambers versus Connolly, First Title Company of Waco, and Alamo Title Insurance of Texas versus Garrett, combined for oral argument with William M. Otto World versus Dolan. We will hear all cases before our noon recess. The time for argument has been informed, counsel has been informed about the time for argument. You may reserve time for rebuttal by informing the marshal of the court. The arguments are being recorded for the convenience of the court. If counsel wish to avail themselves of that recording, you may apply to our clerk. We're ready to proceed on cause number D-2022, Texas Education Agency versus Gary Leeper et al.
May it please the court, Mr. James Todd and Mr. Anthony Safi will present argument for petitioner. Mr. Todd will open for the first 14 minutes. Petitioners have reserved 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Good morning, and may it please the court, I'm James Todd, Assistant Attorney General, representing the state petitioners in this case. Two sets of petitioners are before you. At the state level, the Texas Education Agency, the Commissioner of Education, one TEA official, Mr. Patrick Whalen, and the Attorney General of Texas. Also, petitioners in this case are those I'll refer to as the local petitioners, the Katy and El Paso Independent School District and their chief attendance officers, both on their own behalf and on behalf of two classes that were certified of all school districts in Texas and all school attendance officers in Texas, and by agreement of the defendant, Mr. Anthony Safi, who is with me, will present argument for them. Also with me at council table is Mr. Kevin O'Hanlon, the general counsel of the Texas Education Agency, and I believe someone familiar to many members of the court from previous arguments. It's important to realize at the outset of this argument that the central issue in this case is not whether parents have a right to educate their children at home. They do. The current guidelines from the State Board of Education, which were adopted almost 7 years ago, and there's been no showing that there's any inclination to retreat from them, and as to which all of the school attendance officers as class representatives testified in the courts below so found that they would follow these guidelines, make no distinction according to the location of the school. They simply set some reasonable guidelines for determining whether or not a school exists, but they do not distinguish between home-based private school or campus-based private school. As a result, this is not really what we're here arguing about. We're asking the court to reverse the judgment of the trial court, and which was affirmed by the Court of Appeals, which includes an injunction which prohibits any school attendance officer in the state of Texas from using either the current State Board of Education guidelines or any other guidelines that the State Board of Education might ever come down with to determine whether a child purported to be educated at home is in compliance with compulsory school attendance. The real issue then is whether public school officials have the authority to inquire and to make an initial determination as to whether children at home are in fact in school, and as to whether the State Board of Education has a meaningful role to play in the process of making that determination. There are two overriding harms which this injunction does, and that these harms are a part of each of the specific points of error that we've brought to your attention.
Mr. Todd, before you proceed further with that argument, is that the only requirement or regulation that you're asking to impose? Or That is, to ensure the children are being educated at home? Is that the only interest the state has?
The interest of the state is to ensure that children of school age are being educated somewhere. And that might be in public school, it might be in a campus-based private or parochial school, or it might be at home, but that at a minimal basic level, the process of education is taking place.
And the state is not interested in any other regulations?
That's a broad statement.
Or is it? I'm curious as to what is it that the state is seeking beyond what you described in terms of regulating homeschoolers?
Okay.
To investigate the environment of the home.
In the context of the family code, one of the school attendance officers aren't the only ones, but the school attendance officers are among those who, under the family code, may have a duty to call attention if they feel like a child is being neglected. And the one way of neglecting a child under the family code is not to see that the child is educated. So the injunction also prohibits any attendance officer from carrying out any function under, I believe it's 51.03 of the family code, which has to do with initiating family code charges if a child is being neglected by not being educated. That is also, but this is the only extent to which you can say homeschooling is being regulated. And I've used the term regulation in my brief, so I have to be accountable if the term regulation is misunderstood at times. It can mean different things. What we mean by it in this context is more like an exchange of obligations. If on the one hand a school wishes for a child to be excused from compulsory public school attendance in order to attend an alternative school, all we're asking is that that alternative private or parochial school meet certain very basic elements that any school ought to meet. And that is
some of those are set out in the trial court order.
Well, one of them sort of is, yes.
Does the injunction of the trial court prohibit the state from enforcing the compulsory school attendance law to the extent that that law has been defined by the trial court?
I think that it does, even to the extent it's been defined, and let me explain
what sense would it make to define it and then prohibit the enforcement?
Well, we've asked that same question. Here's how, in effect, without saying it does so, how in effect, and that's one of the two overriding harms that I want to talk about this injunction. The education code sets out a process by which compulsory school attendance is supposed to be enforced. It's through 4.25 of the education code. It's a school attendance officer makes an initial determination, sends a warning. If they're not satisfied with the warning, they bring charges in Justice of the Peace Court, a Justice of the Peace elected by the same community in which the school and the parents are located. Parents are entitled to a jury trial. Again, jurors drawn from that community. The parents are dissatisfied that they can take it to county court at law. Again, a judge elected from the community in which the parent and school are located. Again, the parents have a right to a de novo jury trial. Then it goes to the Court of Appeals and discretionary review by the Court of Criminal Appeals. Now, displacing that, what we now have is a statewide injunction that pertains to every school attendance officer in the state, and any parent who claims to be offering what this district judge defined as a bona fide home school may file a motion for contempt and have this issue litigated in Fort Worth District Court rather than by the system that the education code describes. And that's not an imaginary sort of hypothetical. It's illustrated by something that's happened in this very case. Two of the plaintiffs are parents in El Paso who were convicted both at the JP level and the county court at law level under 4.25 of thwarting compulsory school attendance. After Mr. Sharp had offered oral argument on their behalf to the El Paso Court of Appeals, they abandoned their appeal, traveled to Fort Worth, participated in this lawsuit, and got this injunction. We think that every school attendance officer in the state must be aware from Dalhart to Brownsville that if they're concerned about a child being at home and the parents say we're offering a homeschool, they can proceed no further. And in the 5 years the judgment has been on the books, they haven't. I think the second overriding problem with this injunction is more substantive. It displaces the State Board of Education from a role to play in this process.
I'm still not sure I understand why the state cannot enforce the statute as it has been declared, as the definition has been declared by the Congress.
Well, the attendance officers can initiate enforcement, and they may even say, we don't feel like this constitutes a bona fide home school as the district court in Fort Worth has defined. But beyond that point, they can't have that issue determined in justice of the peace court, county court at law, the requisite court of appeals, because as a practical matter, I'm speaking as a practical matter, it can be brought back to Fort Worth on a contempt of court motion. I think it's unlikely, or at least the school district has to face the very real prospect that it's unlikely that the other process is going to proceed. That's one of the problems we have with, and that this court has looked at before, of a civil court.
You think it is likely that if the state attempts to enforce this judge's own order, mm-hmm. And a complaint is made that they're doing that judge is going to insist upon reviewing it rather than let it go through the ordinary process?
He has the authority. He's issued an injunction, or this court has issued an injunction. His successor in office has issued an injunction. Any member of the plaintiff class, and it's a class that comprehends all parents who claim to be educating their children at home, have the right to argue to the court that his injunction is not being carried out. Now, a district court has some discretion. That, I guess, raises another thing I hadn't considered. At what point can the trial court, who would have continuing jurisdiction over this injunction if this court affirms it, at what point could that court, if it chose to do so, intervene in the ongoing criminal process under 4.25? Could he conclude that the Justice of the Peace Court had gotten it wrong, that the Court of Criminal, that the County Court at Law or the Court of Appeals had gotten it wrong? It's unclear. The State Board of Education also has an important role to play in education in the state. It's established by the Constitution, elected by the voters. And there was a brief period of time, 1981 to 1986, where there was a written statement from the staff of PEA which defined private school, which is an exception to compulsory school attendance, as not to include home school. But the State Board, and that is the alleged violation of equal protection that both courts based the injunction on. But as both courts below recognized, in April 12th of 1986, the State Board of Education vacated that anomalous policy interpretation and adopted...
You say anomalous.
Right.
Does the state concede that it was illegal?
No. No, Your Honor. We say that we recognize that the courts below have found, and we haven't challenged the finding, that this represented a departure from what had been an unstated policy previously. I think that if I were here today before you defending that policy, I could make a case to you as to why it doesn't offend equal protection. If there are any problems with it, they're matters of educational policy, which I think the State Board of Education should have some deference in.
Do you now contend that by superseding those guidelines that this case is moot?
Yes, Your Honor, we do, and that is our first point of error. There is no... an equal protection finding must begin with a classification in which the state divides people up into categories and treats them differently according to category. The classification expressly identified by the Court of Appeals is the difference in treatment between the home-based, home-sited school and campus-sited school, and said there's no rational basis that needs to, it does not rationally further the objective of compulsory school attendance. That distinction no longer exists. So the controversy is moot. It means there's no longer a correlation between the remedy and the alleged violation, and this is merely an advisory opinion.
And what specifically mooted the controversy?
The adoption, April 12, 1986, of the resolution of the State Board of Education, which, according to the record of this case, all school attendance officers are following, which gave three ways of determining whether a school exists. One of them, the second option, let me answer your question before I turn the podium over to Mr. Sophy. The second option under these guidelines say that wherever it's located, a school is a school if the following three things are present. It meets applicable safety and sanitation codes. There's a written plan of instruction designed to meet basic educational goals. And the courts below found, and every plaintiff testified, we've got that. And third, that at least once a year, the children are subject to norm reference standardized tests for purposes of comparison. Again, a majority of the plaintiff's witness says that's reasonable and we do it, and the courts below found that everybody can meet that. So they adopted guidelines for a definition of a school which every home, at least every named plaintiff home school can meet, and therefore allowed parents to educate their children at home subject to these very reasonable standards.
Thank you. Please, the court. Anthony Sophy, appearing for the school district and attendance officer petitioners, defendants below. I would like to focus in initially on a statement contained in the Court of Appeals opinion, and I'll quote, the Court of Appeals held, quote, under Texas law, the trial court lacked jurisdiction to grant equitable relief or enter a declaratory judgment. There's been no cross point of error brought forth by the respondents attacking that holding by the Court of Appeals. The effect of that is the judgment must stand or fall based on whether the court acted appropriately under 42 United States Code, Section 1983. The federal constitutional violation found by the Court of Appeals or affirmed by the Court of Appeals that's the linchpin, that has to be now the linchpin of this entire judgment, is an equal protection finding. And the entire analysis of whether there was an equal protection violation and the liability of the school district, therefore, if any, has to be analyzed within the context of Section 1983. Now, the policies that have been identified, that have been attacked in this case, are basically two. You have the pre-1986 TEA staff interpretations. Then, in April of 1986, you had the State Board of Education itself adopt a resolution, which, of course, superseded those staff interpretations.
Well, those staff interpretations did result in a great many prosecutions, did they not?
They resulted in prosecutions, that's correct, Your Honor.
So they were significant staff interpretations.
No question about that, Your Honor. Not contending that they were not significant. But, of course, the staff interpretation, of course, had to yield and was totally displaced when the State Board itself spoke. My point here is those were state policies. There was no school district policy, not one, that was identified as having violated in any way the federal constitutional rights of any of the plaintiffs. The school attendance officer, by statute, under the Education Code, has direct responsibilities to the school attendance officer imposed directly by the legislature to comply with the directives of the Commissioner of Education, to do what the Commissioner of Education requires, and to enforce the compulsory school attendance law. These are imposed directly by statute on the school of Pentecost. Now, the case that we believe is the closest to explaining the situation of the school districts and why the school district should not have had any liability in this case based on state policy is the Fifth Circuit, Section 1983 case, Familias Unidas versus Briscoe. This is during Governor Briscoe's term in office. In that case, the county judge, a county judge, enforced in an unconstitutional manner a state statute. The plaintiff sued, among other defendants, the county judge and the county. The county argued, now wait a minute, this was a state statute that the county judge enforced. The county commissioners never asked him to enforce it. There was no resolution of the county commissioners which he was purporting to enforce. He was acting independently as county judge, doing things that he was authorized to do directly by state statute. So you might find the county judge liable, but you can't find the county liable. The Fifth Circuit agreed. Why? Because there is no respondeat superior liability under Section 1983. Fifth Circuit held that because the county judge was acting on his own to enforce state policy, the county was absolved from liability because no county policy was identified as having violated the constitutional rights of the plaintiff.
I'm sorry. I'm a little bit confused. Do the attendance officers work for the school district or do they work for PEA?
They are employees and paid by the school district. They
Didn't the county judge and an independent elected official?
He's an independent elected official, Your Honor, but of course he is a county official. He's part of county government. He's paid by the county. But there is no, under the Monell case and other cases cited in the briefs, it's uncontested. There is no respondeat superior liability under Section 1983.
And the Fifth Circuit's decision was not based upon the independence of the decision maker. They didn't know that that was a factor.
Their primary factor, Your Honor, was that there was no official county policy identified that had in any way violated the constitutional rights of the plaintiffs in that case.
And you're saying that's a primary factor, but they didn't acknowledge that the county judge was an elected official.
I believe they did, Your Honor, but that was not, in other words, for any political subdivision to have liability under Section 1983, there must be a policy of that subdivision identified as having violated the federal civil rights of the plaintiffs.
The liability to which you refer is for attorney fees?
In excess of $360,000, Your Honor.
The claim for attorney's fees, you contend that even though the case might otherwise be moot, does the claim for attorney's fees keep this case from becoming moot?
As to the attorney's fees issue, that's correct, Your Honor.
Under Camarena?
Correct, Your Honor. That's still, you know, that is still an issue that needs to be addressed, even if on the merits of the case is moot.
Any other questions? Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you.
And please, the court, Mr. Shelby Sharp will present argument for respondent.
First of all, let me say to you that at no time has the homeschoolers ever opposed inquiry as to whether or not their children were attendants at a private school. That position was never taken before the trial court. It has never been advanced at any time. We recognize the right for the school attendance officers to be sure that children are in a bona fide private school, whether it be in a home or whether it be in any other location. Secondly, we have never taken a position that anything would prohibit the enforcement of the family code. Those provisions are not affected by Judge Murray's judgment any way, top side or bottom. Anytime there's a suggestion that the family code has been violated, the proper officials have the right to make their inquiries and proceed under it. This judgment that Judge Murray wrote is very carefully crafted. In fact, all it does, it describes what the legislature meant in 1915 when it used the language private school. And that's what a declaratory judgment does. It describes the conduct because you look to the legislative intent. What did the legislature mean by private school in 1915? And we had...
Mr. Sharp, then, that Mr. Todd's fears are misplaced, that there would be nothing to prevent a school attendance officer going to a justice of the peace and proceeding
under the compulsory school attendance law that still is enforced.
If a school attendance officer makes an inquiry of a family and they won't respond to that inquiry, or they will not give him any information to show that they do have a bona fide school, of course he can go to the Justice of the Peace and enforce it, because he's not omniscient. He cannot know what's going on or not going on in a home. And so therefore, when he learns that children are at home and they're not in some other place, he would have to go and inquire to determine if there is a legitimate school there. Absolutely.
And he would have then some discretion in determining whether there is a legitimate school there?
What we have here is a declaration by Judge Murray that described the very facts that constituted a private school in 1915. He heard from three historical expert witnesses. He also received in evidence the dictionary definitions that were in existence in 1915, which was the 1909 Webster's Dictionary. Those experts came in and testified without contradiction by any state witness as to what was understood as a private school. In fact, Your Honor, at the time of the passage of the 1915 compulsory attendance law, which is the law before this court, 75%+ of the population was being educated at home. That's where they were. In fact, the traditional form of education in Texas from the Republic up through the passage of the 1915 Act was at home. Even at the time that the Act was passed, when they talked about private schools, they were referring to a home school, not a private academy. There were almost none of those in Texas. So we're talking about a judge being asked to tell the parties what is a private school. That's all he did. And it was based totally on that undisputed evidence. Now, the legislature of the state of Texas, and I invite your attention to the state resolution handed down unanimously by the House of Representatives. This is in 1989, May 8th. Whereas more than three-quarters of the children of Texas were educated at home through the first two decades of this century, and the right of parents has been recognized by the state since that time. Here's an acknowledgement that almost everybody was being educated at home. They weren't considered to be in violation of the law. Now, one significant point about statutory construction is this. The first thing you look at is what was the intent of the legislature. And the second thing you do is what was the interpretation placed on it by state agencies. The TEA and the districts from 1915 until 1981 considered children being educated at home to be in a private school. That's 65-plus years that they considered them to be in compliance with the law.
Sharp, that may be very well and good, but the argument now is that that injunction is moot. Would you address the mootness argument?
Be pleased to do so, Your Honor. First of all, a matter becomes moot when the controversy between the parties is resolved and there are no further sanctions as a result of the other party's activity. When these State Board of Education guidelines, where did they come from? It was a resolution by the State Board of Education to the legislature. They asked the legislature to define private school or to give them the authority to define private school. In this resolution to the legislature, they put some suggestions that the school attendance officers could follow until the legislature responded to their resolution.
And the legislature did not respond.
The legislature ignored the resolution. The legislature would not do anything concerning it. In fact, all the legislature has done is honor home education. That's what it's done. That was its response. In fact, after Judge Murray's decision came down, the legislature has met time and time again, and they still continue to ignore the resolution from the State Board of Education. In fact, the Texas Legislative Council challenged what was in the resolution, and the resolution even stated the Texas Legislative Council challenge and said, look, these are regulations. You have no constitutional or statutory authority to do that. And if you look at the education code, you find it is totally confined to public education. Commissioner Kirby in his deposition said, we have no right to regulate private parochial schools. They never took the position before the trial court that they had the right to regulate private parochial schools. What is the regulation? It is the very compulsory act that we're here before. It said, if you're in attendance at a private or parochial school that has in its curriculum a course of studying good citizenship, you're exempt from public school attendance. So therefore, there's only one requirement that the legislature said we will put on folks who are in a private parochial school. You must have a course of studying good citizenship. That's it. Now, what Judge Murray did with respect to private school was to describe what was a private school as understood by the legislature in 1915. And you have 60-some-odd years of that interpretation. So it couldn't become moot. The second thing is this. After the guideline came down in April of 1986, this trial didn't occur until 9 months later. What was the result? Did it stop the litigation? Absolutely not. When we filed the suit, there were 66 prosecutions. By the time we got to trial, there were 150 prosecutions that had already been instituted. And guess where many of those latter came from? Under the guidelines. And the guidelines were inconsistent with the plain language of the statute. They added requirements. They weren't consistent. All we ever asked the state to do is go back to pre-1981. That's what we asked them to do, but they didn't do that. They said, no, we've got the right to say you've got to meet fire and sanitation code. Listen, if a child has the right to live in that house, you can't all of a sudden kick him out for a few hours because maybe his house doesn't meet those codes. That's absurd. And then when it comes to the...
Sharp, I thought at least the representatives of the class conceded they met all these other requirements.
Your Honor, that was an incorrect statement that the Attorney General's office made to you. Calvertsville of Baltimore, Maryland, one of the named plaintiffs, did not meet those criteria. They don't give a standardized norm test.
Okay,
so therefore, theirs is being violated.
Is your argument that they created a regulation that excluded homes from private school, or is your argument that they have no authority to knock on your door to see if your child's going to school?
Oh, certainly they've got the authority to knock on the door and find out if your child's going to school. We've never taken the position
to that. Then are you saying that when they knock on your door to see if your child's going to school, they have the right to inquire what your child's being taught?
Absolutely.
If your child's being taught in home?
Absolutely. And that's what Judge Murray basically said in his judgment. If you don't have, in other words, school attendance officer comes knocks on the door. Miss So-and-so, we understand your children are not in public school. Yes, ma'am? That's correct, sir. We're teaching here at home. And he says, well, I want to be sure that you do have a legitimate school.
But your argument is to go back to the laws that existed in 1915, which is all you have to do is teach according to citizenship.
Yeah, but you still have to have a school there. You can't have a kid just sitting there watching TV or reading some book.
Do you concede then TEA defines what a school is?
Yeah, but the legislature, when it used the term private school, every authority I've ever read on statutory construction says you go back to the time of the passage of the Act and you determine the legislative intent. You can look at a definition found in dictionaries, current use in Texas at the time. The definitions of private and school encompass the home school. You can look at what the facts were in existence.
I mean, I think I understand that. Maybe I'm needing a little help here, but
I'll try to
help you. It seems to me that everybody's trying to, I mean, it seems like the argument's all focusing on can you educate your child in home or not, but I see the issues in this case being much broader than that. It is not a simple issue. Do I take my child and spend 3 hours a day going through a math book or a spelling book or a history book? The issue is, what I heard you say is TEA only regulates public schools.
Correct.
They have nothing to do with private schools.
Correct.
But TEA, you can see, sets the standard for what a school is.
No, no. The legislature determined the standard of what a private school was, not the TEA. If you look at Article 7...
And its standard was to teach the course in good citizenship.
No, but it used the word private school. And when it used the words private school, private had meaning and school had meaning. Private meant that it was not supported by state funds. School meant, did you have a teacher? Did you have students? Were they pursuing through some type of written material, reading, spelling, grammar, mathematics, and civics? That was the undisputed testimony of what they meant in 1950. And that's what came in from three witnesses who had expert credentials in education. This right here would not have happened if that had not been the understanding.
Did the statute spell that out?
It only used the language private school, and that's why there was a difference of opinion. What constituted school?
And PA has the authority to determine what courses will be taught?
No, sir. They have no authority to determine what courses are taught in any private or parochial school. Commissioner Kirby was very clear on that.
And it comes back to my question, then what authority do you recognize that an attendance officer has in determining, I mean, it's hard for me to imagine that an inspection officer can come out and has the right to inspect for certain standards when the position you seem to be taking is if the health officer cannot use TEA's, or this attendance officer can't use TEA's standards to determine if the standards are met.
Well, first of all, the standards they had didn't define what a private school was. They never attempted to define a private school. If you look at their criteria, it doesn't define what a school is. They don't even attempt to. They attempt to regulate what's going on there, but they don't attempt to define it. Judge Murray defined and described the conduct that was going on that the legislature understood in 1950. And a school attendance officer can find out, one, do you have written material? What subjects are you teaching? And are you pursuing this diligently? And Those are basic inquiries that he can make, and they do make, and
yes,
have made since the beginning.
Do I understand that that's all they can do under your interpretation?
Once they determine that there is a bona fide school there, then the thing they have to do is to be sure that those kids are in attendance at that school. If they're not doing anything, then they can prosecute.
The extent of the inquiry really is to ask whether those 1915 identified courses are covered, and whether the student is there in place?
And pursuing it diligently.
And that's it?
That's right.
And you basically, your position is if they didn't do it that way in 1915, it can't be changed by the state.
The legislature could change it, yes,
but
sir.
But not by the PEA.
That's correct, because they have not been given legislative power to do so.
And you feel that the PEA cannot enforce any kind of health or safety regulation, that's silly.
No, I'm saying that you couldn't require a child who's in attendance at a home in which the child lives, you couldn't say that you can't go to school there during the school hours, you've got to go someplace else because your home doesn't meet maybe the health and standard code. You've got proper local officials that can deal with any situation like that. But remember, compulsory attendance was the only issue before Judge Murray. That was all that was before him. It wasn't to say that you've got the right to regulate or not regulate. They never made an argument to the trial court that we had the right to regulate. They didn't take that position.
And your position is that there is also no ability to have any kind of standardized test?
That's not a school. That's just a method of conducting. There's no requirement for a standardized test. I mean, most people will give a standardized test just for curiosity, but to make it a requirement, if the legislature wanted to make that a requirement, then the legislature could pass that, but not TEA, because they've never delegated the authority to them.
You use the phrase in the home where the child lives. You have a different situation if a neighbor child is brought in to participate in the school with the young people that live in that home?
You could then be moving into a different area, but you still have the right to be sure that the child is in attendance at a private school.
Well,
you wouldn't change any of those.
You use private and parochial together all along. Are there different standards for private and parochial?
No, sir, Your Honor. They're not different standards. And the reason
is there a difference in saying a home school and a private school?
No, Your Honor. A home school is a private school.
So you can have, I have in my home a school and bring all the neighborhood children in, and there would be, the standard would be no different than if you just had your own children.
That's correct. It's the
same.
And
you can charge in charge of a fee.
Now, when you begin to get into charging, you get into the Proprietary School Act, and that's very clear,
right.
And so anybody that's going to get into
so
that would be regulated by it.
But aren't parochial schools in that category?
No, because you have parochial home schools. Let me explain. First Baptist Academy is one of the named parties in this suit. Under its home education department, children out there receiving the curriculum of First Baptist Academy being taught in their home, that's a parochial school because it's under the auspices of First Baptist Academy. That's the reason why that you could have a home school that's a parochial school. Let me just say this to you. I think this will be of some help to you. Jim Margraf, who was a three-term legislator in the early 60s and who chaired the Education Committee in the House and who authored one of the last amendments to the compulsory attendance law, who was very knowledgeable of the history of the act, he testified under oath that he said there wasn't any doubt in my mind that a homeschool was a private school. In fact, he said it is the most private of private schools that exists. So this is clearly within what the legislature contemplated in 1915. But it can become moot where, one, you still have continuing prosecutions and people who are being prosecuted for being in little compliance with the law. Let me quickly shift to the unconstitutionality of what was occurring even after the governor.
Just one moment, if I may.
Please, sir.
If the state does have the authority to assure that a meaningful educational program with appropriate instruction in math and English, history, whatever, you think, oh, how do they measure that? How do they determine that?
Well, first of all, the
state... is an effective teaching program and not just a share.
First of all, the state has no authority to determine if any private or parochial school is an effective private or parochial school. It does not have that authority. The state has the authority to be sure that a child is either in attendance at a public school or is in attendance at a private or parochial school. That's the authority.
What was the underlying policy of the 1915 legislation to assure that our children are educated?
Correct.
You don't believe that the legislature intended for the state to have the authority to assure that our children are being educated to meet basic standards for surviving in our society today?
That's why they wanted to be sure they were either in attendance at a private, parochial, or public school. No question, they wanted to be sure they were in attendance.
How do they measure whether or not it is a real school?
They measure whether it's a real school by what is going on there, not by whether or not the results themselves are effective. Because
so no matter how much of a failure the program is, the state has no authority to say you need an effective program. You just got to have a program and it can be the world's biggest boondoggle, right?
If the state determines that private and parochial schools are, based on information coming to them, are not effective, they would have the right under the Constitution to regulate that if they made that determination. Sir?
How do they get this information if they can't test for it?
Well, first of all, it can be provided to them because the vast majority of
schools... They have to wait until these children are grown and unemployable?
Well, Your Honor, that was one of the things that the state didn't want to get into in this case because, you see, as they looked into the academic success of home education and wanted to compare it with public education, they didn't want to get into that race because we can eat their lunch. Home educators, even according to the very resolution...
I don't quarrel about that. I don't know the circumstances under which that resolution was passed, but it's a House resolution. The Senate never voted on it, and the House also passed on second reading some years ago a resolution honoring the Boston Strangler because nobody knew what it said before it was withdrawn. So that's meaningless as far as legislative intent is concerned. That is not the legislature. That's a simple resolution of the House, unread by most of the members.
Your Honor, that was a unanimous resolution, and it was a very festive occasion.
How was it debated?
Your Honor, that was also in conjunction with the governor's declaration of a homeschool week in Texas.
Was it debated? Or was it passed during morning resolutions
when they say
without objection, it's so ordered?
No, it was passed at a time when there were many homeschoolers present. They were filling the galleries, and the representatives were entertaining them. It was a part of a complete day of festivity and activity. But the one thing...
What did it say besides that? You know, that's really irrelevant. That is a House resolution. It's not a legislation.
Well, it certainly says that the House believes that...
Is it a concurrent resolution to the Senate? That's meaningless. That has absolutely no force and effect in law.
Well, it certainly...
It does not reflect legislative intent. So let's put that away. That doesn't mean a thing.
All right. Well, Your Honor, the only thing I can suggest to you is this. Private and parochial education has always done excellent. There is not one study that's ever shown private and parochial education to be deficient. In fact,
I don't quarrel with that. But what I'm asking you is, how does the state assure itself that it is fulfilling the mandate of the legislature to see that the children of this state are being educated? The fact that homeschools, in many cases, are exceptionally good and far superior as far as measurable test scores are concerned, performance of the individual, to some of our public and other private school programs. Nobody's quarreling with that.
Okay.
As far as I can tell, what they're saying is all of the programs are not that good, and we have an obligation to these young people, mandated by the legislature, to assure that they are at least getting the basics.
Right.
And how in the world do we do it?
All right, Your Honor, first of all, the only authority that the State Board of Education, the Central Education Agency, of which it is a part, the TEA and the Commissioner is to carry out the public education program. They have zero authority on private parochial schools. They've never been given that by the legislature. Now, what was the wisdom of the legislature in telling the State Board and the TEA and the Commissioner that you have no authority over private parochial schools? I don't know what their wisdom was on it, but let's put it this way.
Would you please recite to me the exact language where the legislature said the Texas Education Agency has no authority over private public schools?
Your Honor, it is throughout the code where it says the only authority that it has is over schools that are supported in whole or in part by taxes. That's all the education code says. Everywhere you look in the education code. In fact, we've cited it extensively in our briefs. It says, this is all you have authority over. And the commissioner himself conceded we have no authority to regulate or to supervise or to check to see if it's a bona fide private or parochial school. That's in the commissioner's
definition. I never heard the other side indicate that they wanted to regulate or supervise. They want only the authority to observe, inspect, and test.
Okay. There's not one provision
in
the education
code. They haven't prescribed textbooks, have they? Have they prescribed textbooks?
The only thing that they have in there is educational objectives. And the contendence officer said those were ambiguous, that you couldn't, that they were subject to different interpretations. So when you try to criminalize something that is not even clear itself, that's not even lawful. But to answer your question, unless the legislature through the Texas Education Code gives authority to the state agencies concerning education, they have no authority. That's plain fundamental statutory and constitutional law.
I suppose we'll hear from the other side in response to that.
Following the adoption of this resolution on April the 12th of 86,
yes, sir.
What is it that the state is doing since that time with reference to homeschools that you objected?
They were continuing to prosecute people under those guidelines as of the time it went to trial, and those guidelines were not consistent with the plain language of the statute as it was passed in 1915.
Prosecute them for what?
For not being in attendance at a private or parochial school. They were in violation of
the
compulsory
attendance. For what type of reasons? What types of things were?
They weren't meeting the guidelines. As the testimony was, they were using the guidelines from April on until they went to trial. And those guidelines were inconsistent with the plain language of the statute. You can't make a criminal statute require other material that you're not even on notice of, and which is contrary to just the plain language of the statute itself. They make the comment that because these regulations apply to both parochial academies and private academies and homeschools, that mere broad application ducks the Constitution. That's absurd.
Give me an example of the kind of deficiencies that were alleged that you believe were unjustified.
They were simply taking the position that they weren't in attendance at a private or parochial school because they didn't meet some guidelines.
For what reason? Just give me an example of the kind of deficiencies that were alleged in not meeting the guidelines.
They may have found that their curriculum didn't satisfy the basic objectives, and whether or not that would have been determined before that justice of the peace. You see, the injunction did not enjoin any criminal prosecutions, even the Wells, who had been criminally prosecuted three times. Judge Murray's decision didn't affect that at all. They were prosecuted three times. They paid their fines. The judgment did not affect any criminal prosecution out there. Didn't stop anything or anything. All that were pending there, the courts for fee to proceed. And if they found that they weren't in attendance at a private school, then they were going to be found guilty. Any other questions? Thank you.
Council has discussed at length the issue of trying to get a definition for this 1915 legislation. One of the principal problems here is that is a penal statute, and he sought a definition from a civil court. And that is the reason that brings us back to the Court of Appeals sustaining our point that under state law, the trial court had no jurisdiction to define or enjoin enforcement of a penal statute.
State takes a different position than all the other statutes that have been before.
Well, Your Honor, I'm not involved in that case, and I'm familiar with the case that you're talking about. But the point is under traditional Texas law, there's a very definite threshold that has to be met before a civil court can enjoin enforcement of a penal statute or issue declaratory judgment.
But you're not making that argument on behalf of the state who takes an opposite position in another case.
I'm appearing only on behalf of the school district and attendance officer, petitioner, Your Honor. Now, the Court of Appeals agreed with that position. So you go to Section 1983. Well, under Section 1983, would the federal court enjoin the enforcement of this penal statute? No. The Fifth Circuit already had the opportunity in the case of Trower versus Maple, a 1985 Fifth Circuit case reported, cited in the brief, in which some Texas homeschool parents sought a federal injunction under Section 1983 from prosecution under this statute, 4.25 Education Code. The Fifth Circuit said, no, we're not going to, under Section 1983, enjoin the prosecutions, enjoin enforcement of this penal statute. The arguments that you're making as to what that statute means, as to the legislative intent, as to the unconstitutional application of the statute, make those as defenses in the criminal prosecution. Let it work its way up to the criminal court system of your state system.
So you would agree that for the same reasons that a civil court should not enjoin the prosecution of a criminal statute and enjoin its prosecution, for the same reasons the court cannot do that, the court has no jurisdiction to enter a declaratory judgment under those same circumstances.
That's correct, Your Honor, and that's well-settled Texas law. Now, look at Section 1983. Is there any difference there? Well, one of the cases cited by respondents, Steffel versus Thompson, United States Supreme Court, they review the history of declaratory judgments under Section 1983. And they say until the Federal Declaratory Judgments Act was passed in 1934, the federal courts had no jurisdiction to issue a declaratory judgment in a Section 1983 case. Why? Because Section 1983 is not an independent grant of jurisdiction. It's not a jurisdictional statute. So for that reason, there's no jurisdiction in this case either, because under settled Texas law, you cannot have a declaratory judgment or an injunction against a penal statute except under certain defined circumstances. Now,
before you move on, Mr. Sharp makes the argument that there is the legislature has not delegated any authority to PEA to regulate homeschooling. What is your response?
The attendance officer's responsibility is to determine, is this child attending if he's not attending a public school, is he attending a private or parochial school?
What's the standard determining what a private parochial school is?
Let me just finish this question, then I'll come to yours, Your Honor. So the question is this a private parochial school? Now, they're not purporting to regulate or that private parochial school or whatever it is. They're there to determine, is it a private parochial school? I don't think it is. I need to go to the JP. Or, yes, I think it is. Okay. Now, in terms of standards to be used, the State Board of Education in 1986 did come up with some guidelines that had been thrown out by the trial court.
Under what authority? My question is, under what authority did they come up with these guidelines? What factors did they come up with these guidelines?
Well, Your Honor, it would simply be under the State Board of Education's responsibility to, within the framework of the Education Code, to be able to set educational policy within that framework. And you had this statute that did say private parochial school. There was a perceived need for some guidelines for the attendance officers to use. But ultimately, Your Honor, ultimately, because we're talking about a penal statute here, ultimately, any jury instructions or anything else, definitions, need to come from the Court of Criminal Appeals. I mean, ultimately, they would, unless the legislature fleshes out what they mean by private parochial school, it really ultimately would be the Court of Criminal Appeals that should decide, okay, how's the jury charged? at the trial. Now, getting to this issue of what did the legislature mean intend in 1915, it's not all that simple of a question. First of all, in 1915, when the compulsory education statute first passed, there was a specific exemption for proper instruction by a private tutor. And the experts at trial, the plaintiff's experts at trial, were asked, well, isn't that the equivalent of a home school? They said, yes, that exemption was removed in 1923. As pointed out in our brief, trial court did not use the definitions offered by the experts. Thank you.
All right, this concludes the argument of the first case. We'll take a short break.
The audience, please rise.